Welcome to the View My Seats podcast with John Lord. My guest this episode,
Todd Radom, is an independent graphic designer specializing in branding for professional sports franchises and events, including Super Bowl 38, the 2009 NBA All-Star Game, as well as the graphic identity for Major League Baseball's Washington Nationals and Los Angeles Angels. Todd, welcome to the View My Seats podcast, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me here, John.
As a historian, someone who has characterized and chronicled the many different trends throughout the decades, how would you describe the current era of sports branding and team logos?
That's a good question. I think we're sort of in a transitional phase, and I think we're in this phase for several reasons. And I think you can kind of break it down by sport. Baseball is a traditional-looking game. The sport sort of went way out there. In the 70s and 80s, very much a microcosm of society itself to some degree. So, baseball's in a pretty stable place. If you think of the NBA, you've got these a few dynamics to take into account. Sleeve jerseys are making for a little bit of a revolution. A lot of different jerseys, a lot of, a movement back toward retro in terms of the logos, and a real direct retro in many respects. Football is being driven by Nike. College football is being driven by the apparel companies. And the NHL is a little bit of a different duck in certain regards, but they look good. So I think every sport is different. And I think in a lot of ways, sports branding is in this kind of transitional phase because societally, to wrap it up, we're in a place where we've been in a time of great uncertainty really since 9/11, and economically that would apply as well. And when you're selling to fans in uncertain times, certain decisions are made.
And as you alluded to, so much about rebranding in sports is due to selling more merchandise, and you mentioned the sleeve jerseys in the NBA. Are sports fans so loyal to their favorite team that they'll pretty much buy whatever's out there?
I would say, and I don't want this to sound cynical at all, I think it's actually optimistic. I would say absolutely. I think if you are a diehard fan, you are on board with whatever is out there. And, the great thing is that certainly these days, as opposed to 30 years ago, you've got a range of merchandise. If you want a pink Red Sox cap with blinged out little spangles on it, you can get that. You couldn't get that 30 years ago. If you want something very plain and gray, you certainly can. If you want a red Yankees cap, go for it. It's available. So I think there are lots of choices, and I think fans are, as Jerry Seinfeld famously said 20 years ago or so, loyal to the laundry.
and that's very true because I think the aesthetics really are in the eye of the beholder. What is appealing to us might not be appealing to somebody else, and there really is something for everyone. And you look at the NBA's marketing of the sleeve jerseys and some of the decisions the NBA has made recently, not just to sell more merchandise, but also to create more space potentially for advertising. We're not too far away from major sports leagues having advertising on their game uniforms. How do you think that will affect graphic design and teams' logos in the future?
Well, I think, first of all, I think you're right. And I've been talking about this for a decade or more. Publicly, and this is something that I think has been coming for a long time, and I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later. I don't like it. I think the average fan doesn't like it. I think just as a branding guy and as a designer, I think that the minute that you put another logo next to your logo, it tends to detract. It will dilute your core brand. Sports are special. Sports fans are tribal in their loyalties. And I always make this analogy, but it's true. If you're a Dodgers fan or a Red Sox fan or a Knicks fan or whatever you are, right, your loyalty is far stronger than being a fan of Starbucks or a fan of UPS or some such thing. And again, the minute you put a logo next to your team's logo, it's going to dilute the message. It's going to tend to distract from a design perspective, answering your question, I think it'll make some challenges. A basketball uniform, should that come to pass in the NBA, has a fairly limited amount of real estate, which I think we can all probably theorize that that's one of the reasons why, among others, that, the NBA has opted to go for these alternate sleeve jerseys. But listen, even if it's a 2x2-inch patch, some designer has to account for that piece of real estate. Shouldn't be in too close proximity, if possible, to the team name. And again, our sensibilities here in the U.S. are quite different than those of European fans who have been used to seeing, you know, soccer slash football jerseys with logos galore for decades now. But this is going to be kind of jarring to us, I suspect.
Yeah, and I wonder why that is, because I was going to mention soccer and the fact that as a country we are kind of behind the times when it comes to advertising on jerseys. When you look at soccer leagues from around the world, all their teams have corporate sponsors and logos on their jerseys, and those sponsors be kind of come one of the same with the team brand, and that's different over here. But you know, it hasn't affected loyalty to soccer teams around the world. So I wonder if it would just be one of those things in this country where it would take some getting used to, but after a while, because of our love of sports, we would eventually come around and just accept that these are the times, and you know, life must go on.
Well, I mean, it's a good point. I think that we do need to take into account that we live in a world where all of us are bombarded by imagery and advertising every second of every day that we are online or watching a game. And listen, if you look at what the 1993 World Series looked like sometime, get some DVD of the Phillies and the Blue Jays, and you'll notice a distinct lack of advertising in terms of what was happening behind the plate and on outfield fences, and even the way the broadcast was presented. I think that people are recoiling from this abundance of imagery, and I think that for sponsors and licensees and marketers, you know, too much can be too much. So I think that just because of the fact that in European soccer they've had a 40-plus year head start on us, you know, again, doesn't take into account necessarily the way that the world works now, and it's not going to get any better going forward, that's for sure.
Well, Major League Baseball is certainly sensitive to those concerns, because all of their efforts to try to speed up the game this year are, in fact, due to the fact that they have a lot of advertising and television commercials, and if you wanted to speed up the game, one of the things you could do to speed up the game is just cut that time that you go to commercial instead of, you know, forcing players to stay in the batter's box or putting a pitch clock on the game. A lot of it is due to advertising, and we know that's not going to go away anytime soon, because that's how sports leagues are making as much money as they are with their television rights and their digital rights, and that's all driven by advertising.
Well, that's a huge thing, without question, but as a baseball fan of many years and, you know, a guy who's been attending Major League Baseball games for 40-plus years now, you know, I'll look at a game and I'll say, shut up and pitch. Get in the box. Stop fidgeting with your gloves. Stop tweaking your helmet. There's no question that there are more commercials now than there were 15 years ago, most likely, 20 years ago. Somebody somewhere has done the math on this. But pace of game is a problem, and all of our attention spans collectively are diminished. We've got distractions. You know, I'll be sitting on the couch watching a game, and I've got my phone out there, or my iPad or whatever, and I'm looking at things, and, you know, this is the way we are. And that's a real challenge for all kinds of business partners to all these sports leagues.
And I think we have a really interesting test case coming up this year with Wrigley Field. If you talk about all the renovations that are taking place at Wrigley Field, one of the big things that's happening is they're, you know, expanding their video boards and their space for advertising in the outfield wall. And so Wrigley Field is going to get more of a modern feel with this facelift. And it'll be really interesting to see what the fan reaction is to that, because for so long, the appeal of Wrigley Field and the Cubs was that there was this throwback kind of essence, that if you went to a game at Wrigley, it was like being transported back to an earlier era. And that's all kind of changing now with this rebranding strategy. So it'll be very interesting to see what baseball aficionados, what Cubs fans think about all these changes at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I agree. The entire Cubs identity as a franchise, their sort of franchise DNA, is predicated upon, you know, being this neighborhood ball club in a quaint place that baseball has been played for 100 years. I mean, listen, let's face it. If the Cubs had a stadium out in the suburbs, they wouldn't be the Cubs. So really, you know, it's going to be, as you said, very, very interesting to see what this looks like. Make sure it's not some hybrid monster where you've got, you know, ivy and brick and this gigantic AT&T Cowboy Stadium type video board sitting on top of all that stuff. Who knows? It's a risky move for sure, but, you know, I guess change is inevitable. I felt it's always interesting. You know, it's been interesting watching how the Red Sox handled the renovations at Fenway Park over the last decade, really expertly, very sensitively carving space out of, you know, places that were really useless previously. And, you know, having gone to games there for as many years as I have, it's a really it's a much better fan experience. You know, and you do have modern amenities that are presented in a way that's sensitive to the surroundings.
Yeah, and talking about adding advertising and distractions, you know, at the ballpark on uniforms, to us old guys, you know, it matters because we will remember a more purer era and age when there weren't these distractions. But to our kids, younger generations of sports fans who are just now entering in to sports, they're not going to know any different. They're not going to know any different era. So to them, it'll almost be normal. And in a way, if you think about it, that's a little upsetting.
Yeah, it is. And again, these things do change, and every generation has its own perspective and viewpoint without question. I mean, you could go down the line and, boy, I mean, especially for a sport like baseball, which is tradition-driven. But listen, I think there is this sort of back-to-basics movement in a lot of ways that we're seeing all over the place in our society and our consumer experience. And I think that younger people, I think, are going to embrace a piece of kind of, you know, I don't know, simplicity, maybe you could call it, or retro is big among people who are quite young. And why is that? Because it's different. And I mean, there are several reasons, but I don't know that people are necessarily, younger people are going to take well just because this is the way that it's being given to them. Young people are used to questioning, and you know, they're going to question why is my ticket X amount, considering I've got advertising in my uniforms, even if in reality there's no correlation. You know, it's an interesting argument that's going to come up, and it will come up.
Well, young people are certainly driven by apparel companies, and something you mentioned earlier is that Nike and Under Armour and these other brands are really driving many of the decisions that certainly colleges make when it comes to outfitting their teams. And you look at a school like Oregon, and Oregon, as we know, is driven by the swoosh, is driven by Nike, and I think it still holds true. I remember hearing this one time that a football player plays 4 years at Oregon, and it's possible for that football player to not wear the same combination of helmet, pants, and jersey. There's so many options.
Yeah,
and that's all because Phil Knight, being an alum and a benefactor, and we know the story there. And I'm wondering, from a graphic design perspective, have Nike and Under Armour and other apparel companies been good for graphic design? We know they're good for business. We know they're good for the proliferation of a brand. But are they good for graphic design? Do you like the work that's being put out there that's being driven by these apparel companies?
Well, I mean, listen, there is such a broad swath out there that I would say that some of it is great and some of it's really exciting and some of it's fun and spot on and relevant, and some of it is just change for the sake of change. I think just the movement to so many different looks, you know, it's a very interesting thing. I've often said that your college is like your religion to some degree. It stays with you the rest of your life, if you had a good experience, of course, and it's just, it becomes a part of you, and you're not going to question that. You know, in the case of an Oregon, they are sort of known now, and of course this has coincided with an era of excellence, but they're known for having all of these different looks. If you're some smaller university, again, that brand dilution that I spoke of earlier might have some confusion attached to it. But listen, for the big schools that choose to participate in this kind of thing, you know, it's probably a good thing. And let's face it, it's being sold to prospective recruits, 16, 17-year-olds, this type of thing. And you know, that's going to have a great deal of appeal. Whether or not it's sustainable, who knows? You know, it could be that it's a fad. I kind of suspect it is. But listen, it's had legs for several years now, and it has extended down to the professional ranks to some degree. I mean, look, a couple of years ago, the Milwaukee Brewers wore, I think I counted, 13 different jerseys over the course of a season. The NBA, of course, I mean, who can – somebody out there is counting this, but, boy, there's a lot of different looks, and this definitely comes down from the apparel companies and is highly, highly influenced by the college experience of these last few years.
In the case of Oregon, you have kind of a change of the kind of the success of their program was changed when they started to make this upgrade to their uniforms. And I'm interested to know from you, as kind of the expert here, does the success of a franchise, of a team, kind of determine how many uniform, logo, brand switches they go through? Do you find that studying the trends that teams that don't win a lot are more likely to change their brand, to change their logo, to change their uniform?
Well, that's one of a number of reasons that, especially in the professional ranks, that teams change. There's no question about that. But I think it really depends upon the fan base. You know, this is a big country, and every fan base is different. And I think that, you know, that presents a great challenge for somebody like me. And it's kind of a fun thing, but it's an important thing to recognize. I would suspect that if you are a fan of the Texas Rangers, it's okay for you to have, you know, X number of different uniforms, right? If you are a fan of, I don't know, pick some younger, the Seattle Seahawks look, right? I mean, the NFL limits their members to, you know, a finite number of jerseys, certainly, and it's a short season compared to that of Major League Baseball. But if you're a Yankees fan, you're not going to go for this kind of thing. And I think that that transcends success on the field or lack of success on the field. Fan bases demand certain things. The Cardinals fan base, certainly in St. Louis, a few years back, they introduced a third jersey, and it was very well received because it was, you know, very reverent and relevant to the visual heritage of the franchise. But, boy, it represented a real departure for them. So I think it really, again, depends on the specifics of who you're trying to market to.
And you take a look at a team in the NFL like the New England Patriots, who I don't know how long ago they changed their uniform, but after they changed their uniform, it coincided with a lot of success. And Patriots fans, you go up and down the line, they will tell you that they prefer their older uniforms to the current uniforms, but one of the reasons that they fear a change back to the retro uniforms is because they have so much success in recent years. And that has very little to do, most likely, with the uniform. But the fact is that fans feel that there is a connection. And I wonder how much of that is true around the country, where you get fans and perhaps even people within the organization who feel that part of their success is tied to their actual appearance and their logo and their brand.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a valid point. I would point out that I recently came across a news item from Super Bowl, I think it was 20, right, where the Patriots got walloped by the Chicago Bears. And there was an article by a columnist saying, I can't root for the Patriots. I hate their helmets. I hate their uniforms. They're old-fashioned, yada, yada. You know, these things ebb and flow. The Milwaukee Brewers ball and glove, which is really kind of very beloved these days, was roundly criticized as dated and old-fashioned and being the symbol of a loser in the early 90s. So, you know, these things, like I said, they move and they ebb and flow. In terms of the Patriots, you're right. I mean, the look of the Patriots, which is now, you know, it's been around for 20-plus years, but the majority of that 20-plus years, you know, there's been this era of excellence, and that uniform and that helmet is indelibly associated with four Super Bowl champions, and that's, you know, that's a pretty powerful thing. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, for sure.
When you're brought in to rebrand a team's logo, a team's appearance, What are some of the things that you look for? Do you try to get to know the basic fan of that team? I'm sure there's a decent amount of research that goes into understanding the culture of the people that support that team, the culture of the city. Would you say that there's one thing more important than the others as far as getting to know a certain fan base as part of a rebranding strategy?
Well, it's a very good question, and I would say that any kind of project like this, without, you know, no state secrets involved, it really, you've got to hammer away at research right at the outset. What is the, you know, the DNA of a certain franchise from a visual perspective? What are the expectations of those fans? Why are you making this change? Again, as I alluded to earlier, changes like these are generally made for several solid reasons. Could be a change in ownership, could be a time to break a cycle of losing, to kind of, you know, send a message to the fans, could be a time to, you know, move into a new stadium or arena and have this accompany this move. But again, right at the outset, I would liken it to, and I always do, building a house. You have this plot of land, you are going to, you know, you're building an architect, you're bringing in an architect, and you're putting up a structure, and that structure has to have a very solid foundation. And if this structure's foundation can be added onto, well, you know, you want pink shutters, you can get your pink shutters. You want a mansard roof, you can get a mansard roof. But it's got to all start with a solid foundation, solid reasoning behind all this, and really building in assurances for ownership, for leagues, for fans, that what you're doing is for a good reason and that it's not just for the, you know, change for change's sake.
And how much of the decisions that you ultimately make with these brands, with these logos, with these designs, is driven by the fans? Do you often bring fans in to kind of show them early stages of your work to get their read? Is that part of the strategy?
You know, I would say it's different for every league is different. Every franchise is different. Minor leagues are different from major leagues. It's kind of a, you know, it really, really depends. It depends.
Let's put you on the spot here, Todd. I let's look at a case like the Washington Redskins and defenders of the Redskins, the controversial name, will say that from a business perspective, a new logo change would cause irrevocable damage to the brand, and they would lose millions. Is this something that you buy, or could this just be a convenient excuse?
Well, listen, I can only speak for myself and offer up my unvarnished opinion on this, and I believe that Redskins is a pejorative term. I understand that, you know, this is a fan base that has a deep, deep, deep history with this name, and maybe the sensibilities of the world in, you know, the 1930s when this team became known as this are different from today. You can say, talk about political correctness all you want. Just out and out, to me, it's a slur. So that means that you should change your name. Do you want to be associated with something that, even if it's 15% of your potential constituency feels negative about? You know, I think there's a way around it. I think that if I were advising the Redskins on this, and I'm not, but if I were, I would say, listen, you keep your colors because, you know, you've got great heritage there. And you move it forward. And if ever there was a time for that franchise with a very cynical fan base to some degree, they are down on ownership, they have not won in quite some time, haven't been relevant in a lot of ways. I know it's a big deal down there. But, you know, you kind of pull the Band-Aid off and, you know, it's going to hurt a little bit, but it's got to happen. I believe it does. Bring the colors forward, you know, into a new era of optimism. Keep your heritage to the extent that you should and can. But I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, what I don't understand is it sounds like it has to. It sounds like a total no-brainer to us. And from a business perspective, I don't understand how you don't benefit from changing brands, changing logos. I mean, that's just that much more gear that you get to sell because of re-strategizing and rebranding. It doesn't seem like you'd lose money. It seems like you'd make a lot of money.
Well, don't forget the fact that, for the most part, those kinds of revenues are shared equally between member clubs in a league. So if Washington decided to rebrand, they're not going to gain 100% of eventual revenues based off of that. That's why, you know, people are very cynical. Oh, well, you know, it's to make money. And, yeah, I mean, there's money involved, but it's not like a team is going to absolutely clean up by doing something like this. I think in the case of the Washington football team in the NFL, they need to, you know, well, not for me to say, but you know, these are extenuating circumstances. It's very different from, you know, teams changing names and staying put in the past, the Rays going from Devil Rays to Rays, for instance. This is a very, very different situation.
Can I ask you what are some of your favorite logos and team designs today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, again, there's this broad, it's kind of like you're going into this great restaurant, right? And, boy, you know, the porterhouse for two looks awesome, but maybe I don't want meat tonight. Maybe I want some great pasta dish. There's variety in there, and I don't know that you could necessarily compare the timelessness of, say, a Montreal Canadiens logo, right, which is very simple, but it stands for so much. And, boy, those uniforms are just outstanding. They look beautiful. To something like the Seahawks, which I actually like what Nike has done with that over the last few years, because the team, again, they've been good in conjunction with that. For some reason or another, that works for Seattle. But, you know, boy, I mean, it's we could go on for hours with a response to that. But I would say that there are old ones, there are new ones. There's like this great buffet that's, you know, a la carte. And there's a ton of stuff that's out there that I really enjoy.
Yeah, and it's kind of a tough question, seeing as how, you know, you're heavily involved in some of the decisions that are made for some of these teams and for some of these leagues. So I can just simply offer you a few of mine as a fan and tell you that I like the way that sports is trending, especially baseball, as far as the more traditional uniforms and logos. And you know, some of my favorite are teams like the Dodgers and yep, the Giants. And I even like what the New York Mets have done recently to kind of ditch the third color and go more back to their pinstripes and the blue and the orange.
Yeah, I do too. And I think, yeah, the Mets own blue and orange in the National League to me. You know, this is part of their heritage. And, you know, the black kind of gunked things up. It was trendy at one time. You know, I'll say even, you know, see what you think about this. A team like the Blue Jays, I had nothing to do with it. But, you know, I think that they dug back into their visual past and updated things in a very reverent way that really connected with the fan base. I think it's vibrant and kind of fun, and boy, it looks like the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that whole, you know, I'm a Baltimore Orioles fan, so I, you know, the Orioles the last couple of years have gone through kind of a retro refitting as well, going back to their more cartoon Oriole. And at first I was a little standoffish about the change. I thought it looked a little outdated, but you know, looking at the hats on the players today, it looks good. It fits well, and it actually also brings you back to a better time in the franchise's history. So,
yeah,
you know, I can have my dad tell me stories about what it was like to root for the Orioles in the 60s or 70s, and you go back and you look at some of those uniforms, and they're the same as they are today. And so that gives you a better sense. I actually like the way baseball has trended recently. You know, for a while there in the 90s, it seemed to get a little too graphic, a little too almost digital, new age, futuristic, and I think that the sensibilities have kind of slowed down a bit and kind of gone back in the future, if you will.
Well, every league went through that in the 90s, and that's directly connected to the fact that, think about it, 1992, 93, 94, the way that we used to do this was all by hand. There were drawings involved and all this stuff, and all of a sudden computerization happened, and as designers, we had sort of this toolbox full of effects and you know, things that we could do with logos that we couldn't do before, right? So you got very heavily outlined, if you will, big, you know, chunky shapes. There was, of course, you know, you close your eyes and you think of 90s sports teams, and you're going to think of teal and purple and black and silver. Look at all of the, you know, really, really 90s identities in professional sports in the U.S., and they all kind of hang together for several tightly connected reasons. So, like anything else, you know, trends come, trends go, and after that all settled down, we kind of got back to basics around the turn of the new millennium, and, you know, we're kind of comfortably in there. And maybe that's a good thing. It's kind of like, you know, I think the same thing kind of happened in the 70s as well.
Yeah, one of the things, though, I love about baseball uniforms that is very different from other leagues is that in other leagues, you know, basketball, football, and hockey, you pretty much have a set standard of what uniform is going to be worn that night, right? So the home team typically in other leagues wears white, and the road team wears their colored jerseys, their colored uniforms. But in baseball, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but a lot of the decisions that are made as far as what uniform is worn, at least the top, is driven by that day's starting pitcher. And I think that's really cool in baseball.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, listen, that's a fun thing. And again, baseball is different in so many ways. But when you think about just the marathon that the season represents, there are 162 regular season games. So, you know, I talked about earlier the Cardinals having this, you know, very regimented in terms of when they wear it, third jersey. You know, to break out of that look is kind of, it's okay. And if you are, you know, the Chicago Cubs to have a, you know, a blue jersey, that's okay. Some teams, without question, take it too far. The Miami Marlins, for instance, you know, we haven't seen their gray road jersey having been worn in quite some time. They traditionally wear black all the time. Their alternate has basically taken over as their de facto road jersey. So, yeah, I mean, you can go too far with it. But listen, this, you talk about traditions and things like this. Boy, you know, the Oakland and previously Kansas City Athletics with all of these multiple uniforms, you know, greens and golds and whites and grays and all this kind of stuff, you know, that dates back over 50 years. So there's a reason to do it in baseball more than most other sports. And it is kind of a fun thing. Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite era in sports logos?
The logos or the uniforms? Because they really do become two different things.
Start with logos. Favorite era of logos, and then do uniforms.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When you talk about logos, logos really did not come on the scene in full force until the years following World War II. And when I talk about what makes a logo, right? I mean, you know, it's maybe worn on a uniform, but it's also on a letterhead or on tickets or somehow promoted. Licensing was not really a big deal up until the era after World War II because there was disposable income and, you know, marketing was becoming more professionalized. So all that having been said, listen, I'm a child of the 70s. Those logos from my childhood really resonate still for me in a lot of ways. There was a movement in the 60s and 70s in terms of corporate branding that kind of bled down to some extent into the landscape of professional sports logos here. And, you know, I kind of gravitate toward that. In terms of uniforms, boy, you know, there are the 40s and 50s contain some beautiful, beautiful, beautiful uniforms that still sort of live on today in many respects, you know, in terms of trim and uniform decorations and kind of, you know, just some great features that are not necessarily gimmicky, but it's like, boy, this is the way that a baseball uniform, for instance, is really supposed to look. And I think the same would apply to hockey. Hockey uniforms to me are beautiful because there's a totality from top to bottom. Stripes, you know, they are untucked, so you really have visual opportunities that you don't have in other sports. So, yeah, it's a great question. How about you?
Well, so much of my – I would say that my kind of understanding and appreciation for baseball came around in the 80s, you know, when I was a kid growing up. And if you look back to the uniforms of the 80s, that I think of the 80s as kind of an era of drabber colors. You know, it wasn't really a very bright era as far as uniforms go, especially in baseball. And then we've already talked about the 90s, how the 90s tried all these new things that didn't necessarily work, that didn't stick around for all that long. So when I think about what, you know, some of my favorite uniforms, I have to go back to earlier eras that I didn't live through, that I didn't experience. Yeah. So 60s, 70s. I kind of dig some of the cartoonish logos and brands of the, I don't know if that's 60s, 70s, 50s, whenever that was.
Yeah.
But I kind of like how that seeped into to the logos, to the uniforms. And you see that kind of coming back a little bit. You know, I mentioned the Orioles today, how that's kind of made its way back. And there are other teams that have done that too.
Yeah, I totally agree. And listen, you mentioned the Orioles again. And I think that was a case where it's certainly from everything I read online, you know, the fan base really wanted that back. And it's interesting because when that was removed in the late 80s, of course, the Orioles, which were really a, you know, powerhouse franchise, the Oriole way, all this stuff. You know, they kind of hit the skids in the very late 80s after having won a World Series in 83. And at that time, you know, that bird was old-fashioned. It was out with the old and in with the new. And, again, everything kind of comes around. But it's interesting, something that you alluded to in terms of movements in the 80s. 1987 really was like this hinge point for the look of baseball, where in 79, the Red Sox went back from their pullovers to button-ups with the traditional trim, got back to basics. In 87, the Mariners discarded their pullovers. The Oakland Athletics went from, you know, the look that they had really been famous for in their championship years to a very traditional look with the script A's, script athletics that's still around, right? The Braves get back to basics. There was this huge movement back toward traditionalism. I wouldn't even call it retro at that point because I don't think that's what it was meant to be. But it's kind of like 87 comes around and boom, you know, we're back to button-ups and belts and a real kind of traditional look.
All right, last question for you, Todd. Are you a stirrups high guy or are you a pants low guy?
Now, I would definitely go stirrups high or at least some socks because – you know, when we lost that, when you went, you know, when the pajama look became prevalent, think about it. We lost just this. We lost this color on the bottoms of the uniform. So in other words, you know, there was total design from the top of the cap, from the very button, all the way down to the socks, right? And you know, you kind of squint your eyes and you just see this huge expanse of white on home jerseys or gray on the road. And, yeah, we lost something, and it's kind of a shame. There are people who are very doctrinate about it that, listen, stirrups are stirrups and socks are socks. Give me either and or, but just give me some color back to the bottom of the uniform, and, you know, I'll be a happy guy.
Okay, well, that's two votes for stirrups.
All right, there you go. We're on the same page, John.
All right. Todd Radom, thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Oh, it was a great conversation. I appreciate it, and it was a lot of fun. Thank you, John.
Absolutely.